The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Today is day four now of our investigation of this list of six qualities of the Dharma. This list, it occurs in quite a number of suttas in several of the collections of the Nikayas of the early discourses. It's not a teaching that only occurs once or twice. So we've looked at four of these six qualities. The first is that the Dharma is well proclaimed. It's a useful body of teachings. It's able to guide us from the beginning of our practice all the way to full awakening. And the second quality is that it's visible here and now. We see it in our experience as it happens in the moment. It isn't theoretical. It's not found in books and Dharma talks, but in our practice as we walk the path. And the third is that the Dharma is immediately effective. When we practice in a dharmic way, we can see that it works. And the fourth is that it's inviting inspections, ahipasiko. We're invited to come to the Dharma, to practice it, to see for ourselves whether it works, how it works, and to keep looking, keep exploring. And then the fifth quality, the one I'll talk about today, is opaneiko, onward leading. And I think this really follows logically from the previous ones. When we've come to see for ourselves how the Dharma works, to see its effectiveness in us, here and now, immediately, then we see that we can trust the direction in which it's leading us onward toward freedom, toward the end of greed and hatred and delusion. And when we see these qualities of the Dharma for ourselves, see them playing out in our own experience, we know empirically that the path works. And I believe that as a result of that, we practice it more diligently. We're inspired, perhaps. I know, certainly I am. And to use the pebble in the shoe analogy that I once heard Gil use, once we've seen the effect of taking a pebble out of our shoe, then we're likely probably to take it out more quickly the next time there's one in there. And after a while, it kind of becomes automatic. We might even shake our shoes out if we've been walking around outside in pebbly areas before we put them on again. We might walk in a way that's less likely to result in pebbles getting into our shoes. We might avoid pebbly areas, not wear sandals, perhaps, in pebbly areas. There are a lot of ways to, skillful ways to avoid pebbles. And when we see that our Dharma practice is effective, when our inspection shows us that we have more peace in our hearts and minds, that we are kinder, wiser, less reactive, we are led onward. We naturally begin to act in ways that avoid putting pebbles into our hearts and minds. I think our understanding of the ways that our mind works deepens, and we begin to have to bring more discernment into decisions about how we spend our time, our free time, our work time, even where we spend our money, how we interact with others, the quality of our interactions. We develop more wisdom about avoiding activities like pebbles, or people that lead us into more dukkha. Our hearts get bigger. They get more welcoming. More and more, we make choices that are based on discerning what is skillful, what's beneficial what's kind, as opposed to what leads to harm, both harm for ourselves and harm for others. We keep using the tools of the Dharma, mindfulness, compassion, goodwill, ethical behavior, generosity, and we experience the results, and that keeps us leading, going onward, keeps leading us onward, ultimately to freedom. And there's a slightly different translation of this Pali word, upaneyiko, and it's inward leading as opposed to onward leading. And I appreciate that. I appreciate the both of them. My sense is that this inward movement points to the Dharma being found within us. You know, there is something within us that recognizes and responds to our practice and our study of the Dharma also by aligning with the Dharma in an intuitive way. There's something within us. It is the Dharma, I think. Our inner life comes to express the Dharma more and more as we continue to practice. The Dharma has become visible to us. We see it. We see it. We begin to see it everywhere. I think, you know, sometimes we talk about looking at life through a Dharma lens. But my sense is that the Dharma lens is not something that we put on like a pair of glasses. It's the actual way we see the world, looking through the eyes of our heart, maybe our whole being, through a mind that's developed clarity, discernment, and care for others. We're in the Dharma stream, and the Dharma stream is in us, and we see the world through that. And there's a capacity listed in the essay that I've been referencing about performative literacy. And I'll put a link to where that essay can be found on the web in the chat at some point, because someone asked about it yesterday and there might be some of you who are interested in it. I think this... I think all these are really, they're really relevant to, you know, our Dharma practice. And this one, I think, really, really goes along with the aspect of the Dharma being onward leading. And it is a tolerance for ambiguity, for paradox, for uncertainty. I love this suggestion because I think sometimes Dharma teachings are ambiguous. They are kind of paradoxical. For example, the middle way, you know. Often we talk about the middle way as being neither driven by sense desires nor driven by asceticism, you know, somewhere in the middle. And that's one way of defining it. And that's not ambiguous or paradoxical. That's just balanced. But the middle way can also refer to ideas and concepts related to being, you know, to identifying with a self. And as you're probably aware, the Buddha wouldn't answer when people asked him, is there a self? He argued against those who were eternalists, claiming a permanent existence for self or for anything else that exists, and those who were annihilationists who claimed that nothing really exists. The alternative to these extremes, that everything exists eternally, or that then there's a self that exists eternally, and that, or that nothing exists at all, was said to be teaching by the middle, teaching by the middle. Things arise due to conditions, and they cease when those conditions no longer exist. The Buddha said, for those who see arising, there can't be annihilationism. And for those who see passing, there can't be eternalism. Neither one nor the other. Does the self exist? It depends. The Buddha teaches by the middle. So, you know, being willing to not come down on one side or the other, we rest in a kind of uncertainty, you know. It depends. Things depend. when we solidly identify around a, when we solidify kind of around a concept like the existence or non-existence of a self, then we put a block in that natural flow of the Dharma, the flow that is leading us onward. It's the flow of life, you know. We aren't seeing the onward leading nature of the Dharma when we're trying to pin it down, to fix it in place. The quality of inviting inspection also plays its part in this. You know, we come again and again. We come and see for ourselves. We don't need to come to a conclusion. We keep looking. Wisdom comes as a result of keeping looking. So this quality of mind being tolerant of uncertainty, it allows us to let go of a desire for final truths, you know, for some ultimate description of reality or of the purpose of human existence and some definitive answer to the question, who am I? And, you know, I think as far as I've been able to tell, the humans have always had a desire for firm answers to questions like this, like, you know, what is the purpose of life? You know, what's when did the universe begin? You know, if we can't answer questions like that, I think you know, it leaves us in a state that's where we want the answers, but it's really simple. Excuse me, it's not simple. It's similar. It's really similar to the situation I brought up yesterday, talking about how Sheridan Blau, or actually it was the other day, a couple of days ago, where Sheridan Blau said that students who aren't able to understand a difficult text the first time they read it, they think that they're not advanced enough to know the answer. They think they can't read. But actually, it's not because of that. It's just because sometimes there aren't answers to these questions. Sometimes we think because we can't figure out what's the purpose of life that it's because we're not philosophically sophisticated enough. But the Buddha often refused to answer philosophical questions. You know, does having an answer lead to the end of suffering? You know, is it practical to have an answer? What's useful is knowing the answers to the questions that lead to the end of suffering. Sometimes things need to stay mysterious. You know, when the Zen monk who was sweeping the courtyard was asked, who are you? He replied that he was sweeping. Sweeping. Humans like certainty, you know, it makes us feel safe. But the Dharma is pointing towards becoming comfortable with uncertainty, comfortable with paradox, with inconsistency, with inconstancy, with change. There's that fourth quality of the Dharma, the one I talked about yesterday, ahipassika, inviting inspection, come and see for yourself, keeping the door open, keeping looking. And connected to this tolerance for ambiguity is a willingness to change our minds, to engage with different visions of the Dharma, and to keep our interest and our curiosity fresh, to not come to conclusions. It's really essential, I think, to be willing to change our minds as a result of what we're coming to see in our practice, to accept that we might be wrong about something, and to see that it's not really a problem. It's just part of walking the path, discovering more as we go. We can engage with people who have different views, you know, and come to appreciate those views, come to see the logic and the usefulness of them without necessarily even taking them on, just keeping our minds open to other possibilities. In his essay, Blau mentions methodological believing and doubting. These are two ways of engaging with ideas that we come in contact with. And we can try an idea on for size. You know, for many of us, probably early in our practice, we were just kind of giving it a chance, seeing where it might lead, having a kind of tentative faith, practicing believing as an experiment. And then on the other side, there's methodological doubting. We can ask ourselves, what if my views about this are wrong? And being willing to question our own views and perceptions, to ask, what if I'm wrong about this? What are the implications of that? Just looking deeper. For me, I think of this in terms of rebirth. You know, at present, I don't subscribe to the idea of rebirth. I don't have direct experience of it, for sure, in this lifetime. And I sort of subscribe to the idea that, you know, it's probably just a holdover from views that were prevalent in India during the Buddhist time. It doesn't seem useful to me in the context of ending suffering in this lifetime. But, you know, many teachers who I respect a lot, they do subscribe to it, you know, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm completely wrong. Maybe it's true. And what would that mean to investigate that? What are ways that trying on that belief would be useful in ending my suffering? An open mind, a mind that is still curious, you know, tolerant of not knowing, maybe even really enjoying not knowing, keeping ourselves ready to learn something new from our lives as each day unfolds, you know, while following the compass of our hearts and minds that are more and more clearly keeping us in the current of the Dharma. There's that onward leading stream. We're just moving into the stream. That's how I want to practice. That's how I want to live my life. Keeping beginner's mind, don't know mind, along with the faith in the Dharma that grows as our minds, you know, gradually incline more and more in the direction of actions and mind states and attitudes that arise out of goodwill and wisdom. It's opanayika, onward leading. So I went a little over today. And I thank you very much for your attention. And tomorrow we'll talk about the last of these qualities of the Dharma. And I hope, I think I'll try to get on YouTube way early and see. Hopefully it'll work without having to get Kevin to help me, but I'm very grateful for his help. So thank you. Oh, and I'm going to put the link in the chat right now. It's let's see if I can copy and paste it. Yes, it went in. So hopefully you'll be able to use that. It's a really, I think it's a really useful essay. So blessings to all of you, and I'll see you tomorrow.